studio. Good
Madame.
morning, honorable members, our guests from the department, and also the parliamentary support staff, also the guests from the parliamentary streaming channel, and also the PMG and public. Let me take this opportunity to formally open the meeting of the Select Committee on Transport, Public Works and Infrastructure, Public Service Administration and Evaluation. Today we are meeting to receive a briefing from the department on the Railway Safety Bill, the department is going to lead that briefing. Of course, appreciating the issues canvassed in terms of the need identified to amend the act that was promulgated in 2002, the act that was known as the National Railway Safety Regulator Act of 2002. It was amended in 2009. But of course, given the work that was done by the department, we were able to identify some gaps that needed legislative intervention. Hence, we are here today after the bill was passed by the National Assembly, was then referred to us. Let's hear if there are any apologies that the committee secretary will be tabling.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, colleague, and everyone in this platform. We did not receive any apology. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Secretary.
Morning,
again,
Chair.
Morning, honorable board of.
Sorry for interjecting. Unfortunately, I will have to leave at 11 o'clock for a doctor's appointment.
Let's note that apology, Ms. Bashoff, and
thank you.
And our appreciation for you raising it, and also wishing you well at the consultation. Let's.
Good morning, Chair.
Morning.
It's Kuki Moloi from Office of Deputy Minister Mangu. We did send an apology, sir, at around 8 to Fupeka, stating the late arrival of the Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moloi. Let's note the apology from the Deputy Minister. Any apology from the Minister? Tandy?
Good morning, Chair. I think the minister is online because I just spoke to the minister now regarding the bill. She was in the another meeting, SANEC meeting, but she's going to join and go back to SANEC meeting shortly after introducing the Railway Safety Bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tandy, for that. Let's then get a confirmation from the committee secretary if the minister is online, and in that if that is the case, without any waste of time, then we'll have to then give over to the minister to introduce the briefing. Minister, the floor is yours. Committee Secretary?
Chairperson, it seems as if the minister is not in.
Okay. Let's agree that we then get the leader of the delegation, but upon the minister coming online, we will then interject the speaker that will be on the line to allow the minister for opening remarks. Who's leading the delegation, Kibeba?
Chairperson, sorry to interrupt. The delegation is led by the DDG Makaipia, DDG Ray. We have RSR delegation too in the meeting and the department delegation.
Thank you.
Thank you
for that. Hello, Committee Secretary?
The minister is in now.
Okay. Good morning, Minister. Let's take this opportunity to extend a word of welcome to yourself and the delegation that you are leading. We understand that there are other commitments, but we definitely appreciate the presence of the minister. We will be sensitive to that. And what we'll then do, we'll then give the platform to the minister to give us opening remarks, and then she will then hand over to DDG Makaipia. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me show my face a little bit and request maybe to switch off my camera because of the link. But yes, good morning. And good morning to all honorable members. And of course, the department, DG and DDGs that are in attendance. We appreciate the opportunity given to us to present to you the National Railway Safety Regulator Bill. The National Railway Safety Regulator has been in existence as a fully fledged independent institution since 2005. And in the process of implementing legislation, they have faced challenges in performing certain functions, which we believe they need clarity in the Principal Act. So the National Railway Safety Regulator Act was last amended in 2009. And since then, there have been a major developments in the country, such as I believe you are aware of the massive rolling stock investment program and the introduction of the first standard gauge railway system in the country. All these developments were not anticipated during the amendment of the existing NRSR Act in 2009. Also, the department conducted a railway safety regulatory gap analysis study, which highlighted legislative gaps in the existing Act. The gap analysis study main recommendations where that there is a need to review the existing Act in order to address some of the identified gaps, such as lack of proper clarity on the role of the various players within the railway safety environment, duplication of power of the CEO and the board, lack of independence between occurrence investigations and safety inspections, absence of proper framework, regulatory safety critical grades, employees, and of course, lack of proper appeal mechanism processes, amongst other gaps that we identified. So the development of the National Railway Safety Bill is indeed aligned with the goals of the South African government to increase movement of passengers and freight from road to rail. Once promulgated and implemented, the Railway Safety Bill will ensure improvement in general safety within the railway environment, thereby making rail an attractive mode of transport. Also, we believe that the National Development Plan recognizes specific strategic objectives which are related to public transport and are intended to improve life of the general public. One of the key objectives of the NDP, I mean, is the establishment of effective, safe and affordable public transport by 2020. The bill seeks to repeal the National Railway Safety Regulator Chairperson Act, and the National Railway Safety Regulator Act established the Railway Safety Regulator itself to oversee and promote safe railway operations through appropriate support, monitoring, and enforcement guided by an enabling regulatory framework. The bill complements rail revitalization as part of the implementation of the National Rail Policy. The bill also seeks to improve the regulatory framework regulating railway safety in the Republic of South Africa in order to improve the safety of passengers and freight. The bill seeks to repeal the National Railway Safety Regulator Act of 2002. The bill retains a number of elements of the Act, endeavoring to provide greater clarity on several issues, and it introduces new concepts designed to enhance railway safety. The bill places emphasis on railway safety and recognizes operators' role in managing and implementing safety measures, with the RSR promoting safety and ensuring compliance with such measures. The bill provides guidance on the governance of the RSR. It seeks to remove perceived conflicts of interest and to provide a flexible framework for managing railway safety. In addition, it proposes that RSR must oversee a framework of safety critical grades. The Railway Safety Bill, as I conclude, Chapter 10, brings more clarity to the regulatory framework for rail safety in the Republic, and it is aligned with White Paper on National Rail Policy, which was approved by Cabinet in March 2022. The Railway Safety Bill was passed approved by NA, and therefore it is now at the NCOP. We therefore are here, Chairperson, to table this bill before you for the NCOP to move on with its processing. It also may be another thing, the third party access seekers will have to be provided with safety permits in order to operate on the rail network. So there are quite a number of features that have been included in this bill that, of course, are in the National Rail Policy, but also that acknowledges the many developments that have happened in the country. Chairperson, I thank you very much for the opportunity. I hand over back to yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister, for the opening remarks, giving us the background and the context within which this bill is before us, where it comes from, what are the issues, what are the gaps that it seeks to address, and the importance that was identified to amend the Act, and we indeed express our appreciation for that opportunity that the minister took from her hectic schedule to come and brief us on the importance of this bill before us. Part of the audience and the participant is also a representative from legislatures, which we highly appreciate, because it will make our work also much more easier in terms of the process that will be unfolding at the level of the various legislatures. And I guess the minister then agreed that we can give over to DDG Makaipane to proceed if the minister is happy with that. We were informed that the minister also has other commitments, so we will understand when the minister sneak out to attend to those other critical engagement. Thank you, Minister. DDG Makaipane.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, we can hear you, DDG.
Okay. My name is Mwaku Makaipia. I'm the DDG responsible for rail transport in the Republic. Honorable Chair, we really appreciate the opportunity to come and brief the Select Committee. And let me first greet you, the Minister of Transport, Honorable Chikunga, honorable members of the Select Committee. We are connecting, Chair, from the RSR boardroom. You will see the link in part of the delegation. We have delegation from the Department of Transport, and we have the delegation from the RSR led by the acting CEO, Mr. Muso Slaledi. We always stay, obviously, we're close with them because they are the implementers in terms of the railway safety bill. And obviously, this being the founding legislation for the railway safety regulator. I'll just start in our presentation, Chair, with the background, which has already been covered mostly by the Honorable Minister, to just indicate where we come from in terms of the decision, why we have to really make sure that we have the railway safety bill. The initial thinking was that let's go and amend the Railway Safety Regulator Act, which was the founding legislation of the Railway Safety Act, because of some of those developments that have happened over the years in terms of the work that we do. And this is the act that has led to the establishment. What we then do normally with all our legislations, we then conducted what we call a railway safety regulatory gap analysis to look at whether are we still really being implementing the legislation in regards to what was intended to do when the legislature did that. And that gap analysis really indicated the number of elements which we seek to address in this particular bill that is before the House. And we are saying, as part of that, the number of elements that we needed to really amend, it was not really making it easy. And then we then decided that it would be important that we develop a new bill that will obviously repeal the National Railway Safety Regulator Act. But at the same time, there will be a number of elements that are existing in the current legislation that we really seek to enforce and make sure that it makes implementation easy, and that will improve the implementation of railway safety regulator in the Republic. The bill as it is, it seeks to improve the regulatory framework, both that addresses the issues around safety within both the passenger environment and the freight environment. What we are trying to deal with at a problem statement level, China level committee members, that we have realized that considering where we come from as a railway sector, there's been this major investment that has happened over in the country over a number of years. One being the Givela investment in terms of the rolling stock under Prasa, and secondly, the kind of the locomotives investment that has happened within the railway environment in freight. And that has really brought a number of elements in our sector where, for example, if you then have partnership with companies, international companies, incentives, you then bring some of the experts in this country and how we make sure that those elements that comes to help us in partnership doesn't introduce any other new risk in the sector. And that's really where we're trying to address those particular issues. And lastly, in line with our legislation, we produce a state of safety report, which is done by the Railway Safety Regulator, which we even tabled in Parliament. And some of the elements that we have found out is that most of these railway incidents that we have happened, especially pre-COVID, human error was one of the elements. And you will see some of the clauses that we are addressing in in the bill is really how do we deal with this issue of the self-critical grades element, which are those critical colleagues which are involved in the movement of train operations, and how do you make sure that it's regulated clearly so that we can avoid this incident over the time. They're looking to the objectives of the bill themselves, Chair, which are really covered under clause 3. It really talks to the bill retains a number of elements in the Railway Safety Regulator Act, but at a high level, it introduces the concept that deal with safety, and it really recognizes what then becomes the role of the regulator, and that which is really overseeing safety and the role of operators in terms of implementing safety. Because these are the lessons that we have learned over the years of how we then make sure that we deal with the gray line that exists to deal with that. And the objectives of the bill, it ensures that we focus on safety as an outcome, and so that rail in itself, how we then implement it, it becomes a preferred mode of transport. Because when it says, especially with some of the engagement that we have had with the commuters, both with commuters, if there is a safe environment where the trains are safe, where either the technical level or with boots on the ground in terms of the deployment that we do, it brings confidence in terms of our commuters. Secondly, if we're able to deal with safety and security as an element towards that, in terms of freight, the goods that are transported will be able to reach there in a clear element. And the approach that we have adopted, Chair, in this bill is really focused on safety. One, we know there is an interdependency between safety and security, and I think those are some of the discussion, the inputs that we have got when we are doing public consultation, especially with the Portfolio Committee on Transport, but secondly, with those engagement that we have done as a department. And we believe that it is a really enabling framework that will be able to deal with that. And we will see when we present, Chair, that we have really amplified the section that deals with appointment of boards to ensure that it's aligned to the guidelines by DPSA in terms of how we make sure that we have objective and functioning board with regard to a clear and a transparent way of appointment of those particular individuals which comes to seek and assist government in implementation of its policy objective. The object of the Act, Chair, really talks to how do we then enable operators to undertake safe railway operations, and how do we make sure that within the work that we do, there are collaboration with interested parties. I mean, one of the key collaboration and the memorandum of understanding that we have to deal with is how do we work with the police themselves, especially looking at the security incidents that affect safety, and how do we then move forward. And what we then deal with that again at the same time, which is object of the Act under the clause 6, is how do we then collaborate with other operators within the region, SADC region, in line with the protocol. But at the same time, we have some of these operators from our neighboring countries, inclusive of Mozambique, inclusive of Botswana. How do we make sure that we have clear standards that cut across so that when our operators move into their jurisdiction or we move in that particular element, how do we make sure that? And in that particular element, the RSR has been playing a critical role in trying to make sure that we have a standard or a kind of a accepted railway regulation framework across the region in dealing with that. And how do we make sure that within the 200 and something odd permit operators ranging from various sectors in terms of the mining industry, the agricultural industry, that we have a really coherent governance framework that we understand as a whole that we'll be able to deal with that particular element. And really the application to the bill is that the general application principles remain unchanged, especially with the continued existence of the Railway Safety Regulator. And we have added a provision, obviously, that talks to exemption and a process, and a transparent process of how we do deal with that. Because as part of the work that we do, we have been doing over the years, especially when we publish for the permit fee operations, we have continuously get some representations of some operators, especially those that are in the heritage organization and those that are small. To then say some of these general principles that we seem to prescribe might not be applying to them. And we really make sure that we provide a clear process of an exemption and how we then implement that moving forward, Chair and Honorable Member. In terms of governance, which we have provided, we therefore confirm in this bill that the RFR continue as established, and the objects and the functions are listed largely. They are changed in terms of when we look at the National Railway Safety Regulator Act and the bill, but we provide better clarity in some of those elements that we have dealt with. And how do we make sure that governance is aligned and we can be able to implement some of the international agreement that we have that the Railway Safety Regulator continues to govern on. We recognize that with the work that we do, there are some of the elements that we engage with other governments internationally, but the key element is how we then take those elements, we align ourselves to that and we can be able to implement them in a way that it suits the Republic. I mean, recently we hosted the International Railway Safety Council, which is really a forum of exchange of knowledge of how we deal with those particular elements. And we engage with a number of regulators in really dealing with those particular elements. Like I said, one of the sections that we have make sure that we deal with under clause 9 and the subsequent clauses, which is clause number 10 and 11, we're really dealing with a detailed process in terms of the appointment of boards, making sure that those that we really will bring on board are able to assist us, because the boards play a very important role in terms of the PFME being the accounting authority of these entities. And in this slide, Chair, we really talks to the nomination process, which is transparent, and the numbers that needs to serve on the board being a number of 7 to 13 members. And we really talk to the term of office of those non-executive members, which talks to a maximum of 3-year term, which is renewable to a maximum of 2 consecutive terms. And we therefore, for the purpose of continuity, we are able to then say what are those elements to say at least 1/3 of those executive members must retire annually. We obviously provide even some criteria of disqualification, which we really detail that in the bill to be able to make sure that we really attract the right people to be able to deal with, and people are able to even declare some of those conflict of interest. And we therefore, in the next slide, Chair and Honourable Members talks to how the CEO of the Railway Safety Regulator is then appointed, where we'll at least have to have a board running a process, which we then recommend to the minister, who the minister obviously processes that through the board. And we never even provide a strong ministerial oversight in terms of if the board is not able to discharge its responsibility, how do we then deal with that? And what then becomes a clear process to dissolve that board and make sure that we appoint an administrator so that that process is then followed, this issue of representation that are made in that regard to avoid board process court challenges, so that we deal with it in terms of that particular process which has been prescribed. The next slide really deals to how the board needs to make sure that it conducts itself and ensure that the objectives and that are really being put in the bill or in the legislation are then dealt with, that to make sure that annually there's a clear performance agreement that is concluded with the shareholder being the minister, of clear deliverables that are aligned to the strategic plan and align to the medium term sustainability framework that we need to deliver on? And how do we make sure that we have continuous board evaluation and board performance reports to be able to look that when we do that oversight, we show that the board is able to discharge its responsibilities and we avoid dealing with crisis and make sure that once we do our AGMs, those issues are able to deal with those issues. And we have clarified the issue of the functions of the board and how do we deal with the conflict of interest with regard to elements. And we have gone to an element of an administrative nature of how the board function, especially in terms of the board committees that the board needs to be able to put through to be able to discharge its responsibility, and how we make sure that the railway safety regulator itself as an organization is resourced in terms of specific appointments. And those that are obviously at an operational level are then left to the CEO, because the board in its nature must be able to own the strategy, determine the strategy, determine the direction, hand over that to the CEO to be able to deal with that. But obviously the board must, in making sure that they discharge that responsibility, we're putting this bill that they approve those senior appointments that are made by the CEO to make sure that the right resources are therefore be able to be put on board to be able to discharge that particular strategy that they'll have really dealt with. We've really, in the next slide, Chair, with slide 14, we talk about what then becomes these elements that we have to fund the railway safety regulator. I mean, looking back at history, majority initially we found that the railway safety regulator when it was established was more funded by the fiscals, but over the years, based on the responsibility that has been given by the regulators, we've seen this shift of the regulators funding a number of elements in terms of the railway safety regulator. But the key principle here is that the regulator itself is not for profit. It needs to make sure that whatever activities that they do in terms of audits, processing of the permits, and those inspections are really covered in terms of the key elements of the regulator. And over the years, we have seen that when we are faced with challenges, we really didn't have the end covering clarity of how we then deal with that. And we have really added that, one, the money approved by Parliament will then remain. We'll have specific fees, which is the permit fees, which are in terms of Section 66 of the bill. And we have added the levies that need to be obviously adopted there, working closely with the Minister of Finance, because that those are the lessons that we have learned, and we have made sure that it's clear that if there's any other fees that we need to prescribe, we make sure that we don't become ultra-virus. We really make sure that we do it in line with the legislation, that there is pockets of those funding streams that the legislature will be able to deal with that. And really, that comes from the lessons that we have learned over the years in terms of implementation of this legislation. Moving to the next clause, which really talks to the issue of safety permits, which becomes a critical license for any other operator to be able to undertake a safe rail operation in the Republic. And one of the elements that we have added, which is the categories that we want to deal with, is the concessionaire, a person that will be able to operate contracts and manages the railway, and those that conduct the railway operations on behalf of another person. And one lesson that we have learned, when, for example, the concession of Gautrain was introduced some years back in the country, where to deal with the regulatory elements and say under which categories to be able to put that, because it's really some of those elements that we have never anticipated in 2002 when the legislation was promulgated. But like the minister said, we have the white paper now, National Rail Policy, that has been approved by cabinet in March 2022, and it seeks to introduce how as government we then partner with the private sector. And one key element of those being the introduction of third-party access in our rail network. And this element, at the same time, obviously seeks to then say Whoever becomes a concessionaire, they have responsibility to be able to deal with that. But secondly, even asset owners have that responsibility. So the clause really classify that no one can be able to operate and have a railway service in the country without making sure that they go through the RSR and get a permit. The next slide, Chair, really talks to a clear process of how do we then make sure that it is clear, transparent, and how do we deal with that. And I think we have made sure that aligning to the funding streams of the regulator, and at the same time, how do we make sure that the activities of the regulator are funded and become that additional condition that we put as the condition to have the permit fee, that even if the period of validity of this permit fee, depending on analysis of the safety SMS safety management system that is submitted as part of the permit, there is that annual fees which is aligned with Section 66 of the VIN, as we have talked to. And we put a clear process that the regulator must obviously make sure that the applicants are notified in time, and to make sure when the permits are expiring, and then so that a proper assessment is done, so that we don't end up in situations where you are at towards the end of the end of permit, and the operators really don't have certainty when whether that has been dealt with in terms of that. What we then do in terms of the clause 31 to 32 to 33 really, we talked about the process of how do we consider this permit to make sure that we give a clear time of 3 months of application through the permit, so that it really helps us to make sure that the regulator is able to process that. How do we make sure that we deal clearly now with standard and permit specific conditions? Because there's been a contestation over the years with the operators on how we then deal with those particular issues, and we've learned from that. And what then becomes the process of surrender suspension, so that it really doesn't depend only to the CEO. And you see what we have done with what we have learned. We have some appeal mechanism now that even goes beyond the element of what the CEO can do, and where does it, even if the board agrees with that, there is an additional element mechanism that we are able to deal with that. One of the clauses that we have included, which is new, Chair, in the bill, is this issue around the safety critical grade, which is very critical, and we are really dealing with that in clause 34 and 35 of the bill. Like I said, some of the accidents that we have done over the years, the Board of Inquiries indicated that human error, which means our employees which are in the safety critical grade, are not really been managed properly, regulated and refreshed over the years. And this really seeks to introduce that particular element. And like I said, we'll be introducing third-party access in our rail network. We've seen it with the kind of build programs that we have done in investment, both in PRASA. You even have train drivers, those who work in the signaling environment, which comes from other countries. How do we make sure that when they come here, we're able to deal with that? And we're very clear that we make sure that the railway safety regulator will oversee the management of the prescribed framework for this safety critical grade, which we obviously will detail it in terms of the regulation, which we will deal with that at the end of the bill. You'll see that previously those training institution was really more within government, but we realized that probably Mwako and San might decide they want to have their own school to be able to deal with this training of licensing of specific grade. How do you make sure that they do that? The RSR will obviously collaborate on the curricula, which they'll have to work with CHITA, which is the training institution with us, but obviously working even with the existing school of rail that exists in the country, namely the one from Transnet, the one from PRASA under Givela, so that we learn from that. One of the challenges that we have experienced over the time is that when there's an accident, a train accident, and there is obviously casualties, the RSR is not actually able to then identify whether the driver at the same time is it qualified. So one of the functions that we are adding there is that they must establish and maintain a database of safety critical license holders, which then means those people will be able to be licensed so that when this kind of challenges happen, we know and we can be able to respond immediately on that. And we're saying, if you are in that particular space of those people that who are going to categorize in the, especially in the regulation, you can't be able to perform that particular work and will be able to, through notice, obviously, gazette those and make sure that we are able to deal with that in detail. And the RFR will be charging that responsibility to even workshop that with various operators. The next clause, Chair, is really dealing with the standard, which becomes one of the critical instruments that we use within the railway industry, especially in line with the technology that we employ and make sure that things are done accordingly, and how we make sure that those standards that we provide in the regulatory environment are doing that. And we're saying in that element that obviously Minister will make sure that those standards are gazetted and prescribed, and the regulator will probably have a responsibility as with the experience of implementation to propose those regulations. Even industry players can be able to do that, but those will be published for comment. It will be a transparent process that we really make sure that there's compliance so that we're able to deal with that. One of the critical systems that we have within the railway safety regulator is a safety management system which helps us to be able to determine the risk and the kind of capability that the operators have in really managing their risk in a railway safety environment. And this really accompanies it, the application of the permit, to make sure that when we go out there, we as the regulator to go and audit and do inspection, this becomes a Bible or a tool that we really align to make sure that whatever that has been promised, the operations are happening in that particular element. And we say once we have that system done, determined in terms of a care process, it will be put on the gazetted, and the regulator will be able to manage those particular elements. There is this section that we have really amplified, Chair and honorable members, to ensure that our safety inspectors in the railway safety environment have teeth and they can be able to buy, especially looking at this massive investment that we want to introduce. And we have made sure that we added and we make sure that we amplify that section, that there is routine inspections that are put in there, and obviously enforcement inspection aligned to some of the constitutional imperatives and the court cases that we have dealt with them, so that when there is really unfair, unsafe situation, they can be able to deal with those particular issues. Then we really put a clear process of appointment of those inspectors, how routine inspection must be able to do to happen. And what we have even done as part of is reinforcing this particular bill, Chair. Eventually, the railway safety regulators are in partnership with the University of Pretoria to make sure that even as a country, we develop a recognized training qualification for railway safety inspector in the country to make sure that we have people who are really clear and those kind of things. Then we have provided in the bill what then becomes the appeal mechanism to be able to deal with those particular elements. We've amplified in the current legislation, and that is in the bill, the issue of railway occurrences, which we have seen happening over the years, and we have really categorized it in three levels to then say what are those responsibilities that must be given, one, to the operators. Secondly, what are those responsibilities in terms of occurrence that must be given, one, to the railway safety regulator, and lastly, what then becomes those elements that we need to do at a higher level of commission of inquiries. And what then becomes one, a responsibility of the operators in that regard, which is really aligned to the objectives of the bill that we have pronounced in our initial slide. We then say, obviously, minister must prescribe a railway incident occurrence element, obviously, in terms of the regulations. And what then becomes, the operators must make sure that immediately that happens, the scene of the occurrence must be secured, they must record the names of all those persons who will be able to do that. And really, when there's a major investigation that needs to be conducted, one by the independent investigator, to make sure that there is transparency on how that happened, and that person then reports to the minister in that particular regard. The minister might even exercise the exercise of what role does the RFR play as an advisory role in that particular element. And so, basically, we are saying there's what we call standard investigation, which we are dealing with in terms of the bill, which we are saying that becomes the responsibility of the operators themselves to be able to conduct, but with a clear guidelines from the railway safety regulator, and there's a clear time frame when that has happened, how do they submit that to the regulator to ensure that the regulator will be able to monitor implementation of those corrective measures that are in the system. And lastly, if God heaven forsake, you then have a big accident that happens, would obviously have to have a commission inquiry, which obviously is triggered by His Excellency to be able to make sure that there's a fair transparency of how we deal with those particular elements. We have added this section, Chair, and we're obviously going towards the end to then say, if there's really an element of people in the rail industry not being happy about the work that we do as the railway safety regulator, how do we make sure that there is a clear appeal? Because the current legislation was only able to provide the appeal to the level of the board. We've actually added an element that if the railway inspector issues a notice or a fine, the operator is not happy, they can appeal that to the CEO. If they are not happy with the CEO, the board can establish its own board appeals committee. They can do that. And beyond that, so that we avoid the issue of court and everything, we're saying there is an appeal tribunal which deals with appeal across other modes of transport. We then say here's an added element of how we make sure that the issues of public transport within the railway safety regulator are dealt with those particular elements, which is one of those inputs, Chair, that we have had from our operators moving forward. The last section, Chair, towards the end of the bill really talks to those regulations that we need to deal with in terms of to ensure that the bill is clear when it becomes legislation is really implemented. And from clause 61, 62, really, we're able to deal with the process, including what then becomes the empowering regulation. What were provisions? What we then obviously have to do is that upon the legislation being approved, the bill being approved, we'll have to make sure how we deal with the current regulation that then exists within the railway safety environment, and how we then align them to the bill, but certainly the development of those regulations that will make sure that the implementation of the bill becomes in. And those, well, what is very important, I think, is how do we make sure that the general power and a process that is prescribed, that when minister developed the regulation, which is delegated function in terms of that particular regard, make sure that the impact of such regulations as government were able to make sure that it doesn't really kill the rural environment, but thrives with especially the burden created around those in terms of the element we are introducing in terms of safety critical gains, so that the compliance costs are really minimum to make sure that we balance what then becomes the safer railway operation and economic viability of those measures in the Republic. And therefore, in the next slide, Chair, we then identify those regulations towards at the end of the bill, which is the regulation around the design construction. We obviously have a regulation which talks to How does the operators make sure that they are safe, railway safe operations, the information that they submit to the regulator through NIMS, how we make sure that it's secured and dealt with? They will have the regulations on the railway occurrence, which include those standard investigations that I and the major investigation that I talked to. We'll talk to the regulations on fees, we'll talk to the funding instruments of the regulator, but we'll then have even the regulations on one notice and penalties. Well, one of the elements that there's been a complaint with the operators that the penalty that was raised previously was more about money making scheme. So I say no, this is a transparent process, and we even undertake that it's not going to be part of the fees of the regulator, but that will be paid to the National Revenue Fund, and we'll have the regulation of safety critical grades. At a level, Chair, is that the bill in itself, I mean, has gone through a number of processes in terms of really consultation, and we have made sure that in dealing with that at a departmental level, we have engaged with organized labor, the RFR, all critical government departments, which have, are interested, including public enterprises, considering that Transnet is a shareholder there, National Treasury, because of the issue of levies, that have talked to all provincial Department of Transport, local government operators, obviously even the Department of Justice through the State Law Advisor, to make sure that the bill itself is really in line. We have done the CS process, we've engaged with the railway industry, network processes, and we've made sure that we have dealt with all these elements. We got to the process of the Portfolio Committee on Transport towards the National Assembly, and we have been instrumental in working and responding to the metrics on some of those comments that have happened through public consultation. Our view and belief, Chair, is that once this is promulgated, it will lead to significant safety improvement in the rural environment, and there'll be some minor cost, obviously, from implementation, but we believe that the benefits derived will outweigh the cost in terms of the maturity of some of the elements that we'll be able to deal with. And it is our responsibility as government and the real estate to ensure that beyond that from aggregation, how do we make sure that we don't have a knee-jerk approach in terms of implementation, but we prepare the sector in terms of that implementation moving forward. With that said, Chair, that brings me to the end of the presentation. I'll hand over back to you, Chair, and the colleagues here will be able to assist us with questions that comes out from the committee members and how we move forward. And we'll take your guidance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, TDG, for taking us through the presentation, following on what the minister has as outlined. Indeed, there is more clarity now in terms of the roles of various players, the appeal mechanism, the framework. These are some of the issues that are emerging from your presentation. The funding challenges that you are addressing. What I will then do, honorable members, I will then open the floor for engagement and also clarity-seeking questions. I'm trying to look at my screen. It's a bit of a challenge. You know, when you use this gadget, sometimes they can mess you up. I think members can, of course, I've noted Honorable Team, I've noted Honorable Dango, Honorable Khai. Those are the hands that I've noted thus far. Honorable Tim.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to say that The DA supports the bill, and we welcome the various measures in the bill that promote devolution. So thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Professor. Honourable Dango.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I may have missed it, but when I looked at the stakeholders that were consulted, I noticed that the South African Police Services were not consulted on the matters there. I raise that because presently, and I can give the DG or the officials details, the railway stations are still being stripped. The historic railway station in Kliptown is at a plinth level down there. In Lanesia, the fence was just removed, and all the way to Orange Farm, there's a removal continuously. Now, what is the issue of security, and will the new bill provide for that kind of security, or will there be railway police involved as well in policing these matters? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Dango. Let's give over to Honorable Khai.
No, thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to the Minister for the opening remarks, and also for the presentation by the DDG. I just want to follow up on the issues that are raised by Honorable Dango, because I wanted also to check what will be the role of the inspectors. Will they be people that will be in the office, or will they be moving around the railway lines to check issues of fencing, stripping off railway lines, those kind of things, so that you prevent and avoid accidents. But also issues of signaling, whether those would be form part of the work of the inspectors, or the role of the inspector have not been specified per se what will be their role. I guess that maybe this could be some of the issues that they will be looking at. But also for safety purposes, I want to find out whether there will be, as the Honorable Dango is indicating, in some areas you find out in maybe the communities, even if the area has been fenced, the fencing will be vandalized or taken out, used by the communities for themselves, and that leaves the area around the railway station or railway lines. Then people become vulnerable to accidents because the areas around the railway is not secured or fenced. Whether the bill talks to such issues. So with regard to the appointment of the CEO, I just want to check, because the department has a number of entities with boards and CEOs. Is there a standard way of dealing with the boards and the appointment of CEO, or are there different approaches? Because I would think that there should be a standardized method in which the department deals with issues of appointment of boards and appointment of a CEO. Now, this proposal in the bill as this, the board deals with the process, but then they must submit two names to the minister, who will then in turn consult with his colleagues in cabinet. Is this across the board in terms of the entities of the department, or is this just this particular entity that will have to follow those kind of processes? But also the fact that the minister has powers to discharge the CEO, the bill says in consultation with the board, shouldn't be the other way around, where there are issues of poor performance or issues of discipline or what, for whatever reason that require the termination of the CEO's contract or discharge. Shouldn't it be the board that recommends to the minister so that the minister then can concur with the decision of the board, not the other way around where the minister then discharge after following due processes that that's what the bill says. Then it consults the board. My view is that it should be the other way around. It should be the board that monitors the CEO's performance, issues of discipline and everything else, and as a result then takes a decision to discharge the services of the CEO and then consult the minister for concurrence. But the way it's put in the bill, it's other way around, Honorable Chairperson. Yeah, those are the matters that I just wanted clarities on. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
If they can take off the, because I don't even see myself, the presentation.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Chai, for that question. Just on there's an area that speaks to the major investigation, I think it's clause 51, on major investigation. I just want to check, because it says that in terms of clause 51 8F, where an operator undertakes its own investigation into a railway occurrence, the finding, conclusion and recommendation or results relating to the investigation and not be released to the public until the report by the investigator has been published as contemplated. I think the clarity will be the reputational risk to an operator for as long as an investigation into an occurrence has not been finalized. The question will be, what is the motivation for prohibiting the release of a report of an investigation undertaken by the operator, unless the investigation report contemplated has been issued? Is there any motivation for prohibiting an operator from conducting an internal investigation in respect of a major investigation in certain instances? And what factors would the minister take into consideration? I think that is the question that I wanted to check. And the last one will be on the regulations, the empowerment by the minister in making regulation in respect of unlawful occupation of property owned by the safety permit. I think there's a clear reality that one can relate to in relation to this. I think there has been, I think from the last 2 years, the occupation of the people along the Cape Town Central line. It will be important just to get a sense as to is there any intervention that can be made, because we know that the Minister of Transport, Praza, the City of Cape Town, has failed in the past to address this issue. So the question is to whether Is it envisaged that there has been a gap that could have prevented the regulator to have intervened, because that's why it looks like there's a stalemate. So it will be important just to get a sense as to whether Article 621F is it aimed at closing that gap, so that we are able to mitigate what is happening now. Thank you, Chair. Let's then allow the yes, Honourable Khai.
Chair, there's an analysis that has been made by the content advisor, and they are very good questions on that analysis. Maybe if you allow, maybe I can take this opportunity to
yes, let's
so that they are also quite a number of them, Chair. So I'll ask for your indulgence.
All right.
Okay. Just go to them, Chair. Just a minute. Try to go to them. Why is also opening the. It's just a. Struggling with this, or the question, Chair, is that whether the regulatory gaps identified in the 2014-15 have been addressed in the bill? That's the first question. If they can perhaps note that question, the next one, Chair. Is I'm trying to scroll down on this report to whether the with regard to the clause 30, where a person makes an application for a safety permit, the regulator may require an independent review to be undertaken of samples or objects supplied by a person. The question would the South African testing facilities or laboratories have sufficient capacity to evaluate such a samples of object without undue delay. So that will be another question. The next one, Chair, with regard to clause 39, the National Railway Safety Information and Monitoring. So the question, will the information and monitoring system be capable of providing real-time reports to inform the ongoing management of railway safety? So that's another question. Just a minute. Because this is an important question. I just thought that some members would be asking them. Then the next one, Chair, is around the major investigation on clause 51. They say there may be a reputational risk to an operator for as long as an investigation into an occurrence has not been finalized. What is the motivation for prohibiting the release of a report of an investigation undertaken by the operator unless the investigation report contemplated in clause 7A has been issued? What is the motivation prohibiting an operator from conducting an internal investigation in respect of a major investigation in certain instances, and what factors will the minister take into consideration? Then on clause 62, regulations regarding design, construction, alteration and the new operation. I'm sure it's similar to the question that you asked earlier, Chair. What role does the bill envisage for railway safety regulator in respect of persons occupying land along the rail network corridor, as has occurred in the Cape Town centralized. So those are the questions that I'm taking from the analysis prepared by the content advisor. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Honorable Khai. Let's get a guidance from the minister whether we should allow the DDG and the team, the CEO, to respond, and then if she's still around, she might then have a final word or say in relation to the questions posed by honorable members. Minister, let's DDG.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, to the question from honorable members. I'll just start, Chair, by maybe raising this issue of that was raised by Honorable Dango in terms of how we work with the South African Police Service. We recognize, one, the importance of the role they play, especially within the security environment, because of the work that we do together. What we have done, we actually, even as part of the board of the Railway Safety Regulator, we make sure, since its establishment and it's aligned in the legislation, that we have somebody from SAPS that obviously sits on the board to advise us on those risks. So that's very important. So that when there is a need for joint operations together with the operators, after we identify the hotspot areas, there is an undertaking of how we deal with that. And secondly, in producing the state of safety report, Chair, there is a critical element that talks to the security incidents. And in that regard, we have a memorandum of understanding with them to provide that verified information that is reported in their elements. So that's very, very important that we do that. But like we said, the Railway Safety Regulator's role becomes that of overseeing safety. We then say that operators themselves are still responsible, but the Railway Safety Regulator then provides the rules of the game in terms of what are the elements that must be put in place for us to be able to respond to that. So in, for example, as part of the safety management system and the application of the permit, even though this is a safety element, but the operator must support a safe security plan as part of that element to ensure that when they do that, when they evaluate the permit, that there is a realization of that is a very important element of how they're going to secure. So we work very closely with SAPS. And looking at even the issue of railway police, you will remember that, like I said, the cabinet has approved the white paper on national rail policy. And one of the critical elements in that particular regard is how do we then engage with ministry, because that's their responsibility, with the Ministry of Police to ensure that railway police are introduced in the railway space. But currently where we are, obviously it might not be enough. I mean, in the environment of Prasa, for example, there have all been an introduction of what you call the integrated security plan, where we implement the combination of both technology and insourcing of security inside, and to then say what are those critical areas of the network that we need to secure. Where we've been running trains currently, there's been some improvement, but we know we can't cover the element. But I think that's what the RSR needs to obviously, as part of the inspection, monitor in terms of that regard. Honorable, I talked about the role of the railway inspectors. The railway inspectors, their job is really to want to ensure that there is safe railway operation in line with the safety management system that the railway safety regulator will provide. And obviously, make sure that they provide they implement on that. So the safety management system will then demonstrate how railway safety operations will be able to do that. When the railway safety operators goes out, they'll be able to look against that when they do the inspection. For example, one of the key elements is about the issue of speed restriction. If the railway safety regulator says this is the speed that is going to be running that particular element, the inspectors will be able to look on that. And the honorable member talked about the issue of the signaling, whether we involved. What the effect in terms of those standards that I've talked to, Chair, is that the railway safety regulator, if there's any introduction of new system, which include signaling being one of them, the track being one of those, there is a submission that is made to the railway safety regulator, which will then make an analysis and they provide what you call a no objection for us to be able to, for the operators to be able to put that. So it is part of those elements that they'll be able to deal with that. But one of the regulations, for example, that we have on the issue of safety, especially around station, it then becomes a responsibility of the operators to be able to deal with that. So there is elements within the railway system that that the operator, that the railway system look at, and an operator, when they complete that, they'll be able to make sure that they comply and make sure that at the regulator level, they make sure that it's complied with. So there is an element that will play the railway safety regulator in that particular regard. Our inspectors and technical people in the regulator will go and analyze and see if that is safe and fit for the purpose. On the appointment of the CEOs, that the shareholder would then becomes the... Maybe before I come to that, I mean, there is these regulations which I think Honorable Chair talked to together with the last comment, that we have regulations which are even in the current legislation and in the bill, which is the regulation regarding infrastructure of activity affecting railway safety operation of 2020, which will be taken over in terms of the new bill. This is where we really make sure that we need to secure that. So what is critical is that the RSR moving forward needs to make sure those regulations are enforced by the regulators to secure the railway environment. If that compliance is not happening, what are the kind of penalties or corrective measures that will be able to put in that regard? On the regard of the appointment of the CEOs, and I'm sure if my protocol principal are still here, they'll add to that. There is a chair. And normally a clear way of how to do that in government, because there's a realization that the government entities, the shareholders, is really government, and those appointments that were guided, they are done through cabinet, but the board and the accounting authority ensures that they run a clear, transparent process where they advertise, they interview the process, and then they make a recommendation to the minister. And the minister then takes that appointment, so as candidate for appointment. But the contracting and every element of how the CEO operates then sits at a administrative level, which is then done by the board. It's standard within transport, within other entities, and we all normally wouldn't want, we prefer to say, it's always good to recommend more than one person to the minister, so at least the minister can apply his mind to show has the board really applied his mind, and really that talks to those powers of how we then discharge the CEO, because then it depends on obviously when there are challenges within the system, how is that triggered. Obviously, the board will have to make their representation in dealing with that. Normally, the minister wouldn't really go beyond what the board has responded in that particular regard. I mean, the chair has raised the issue of your major investigation. If we're to compare that chair with the current legislation, which I think are related to even what was raised by Honorable Kai in terms of the last comment, is that there used to be a general board of inquiry with regard to that. So we believed that, and everything was then happening at the railway safety regulator level, which becomes an institution at the same time, which must even show implementation. So they were doing this investigation, making recommendation, and making sure that the same recommendation that they go and oversee the element of its implementation. So it was really more the separation of those particular elements. But to make sure that the minister in that regard, which is the issues will be put in the regulation, the minister will have to make sure that the minister at that particular time must make sure that there is clear terms of reference of the investigation, what are the issues, but mostly some of the elements that are considered when we look at major investigation chair will be really issues around the loss of life and serious damage to railway infrastructure where there's serious cost, so that we are able to deal with those particular elements. So if we were to really relate that, it's related to then say that the clear element of sight of how we then deal with those particular elements. And we have checked again, there has been an element that has caused a number of elements of the budget of the railway safety regulator. And then we are then saying, even in that particular element, we'll be able to make sure that this thing is independent, so that if we are taken to court, it can be tested, but the department will be able to even provide both the administrative and the financial element to that element of the investigation in terms of that particular regard. So the factors that we, and make sure that, because we have had over time where we then have affected parties writing to the department, asking for that report and all kind of things. So we believe it must be then released by the minister for clear transparency, so that we can be able to deal with that. The issue of central line, Chair, actually this regulation that we have on the infrastructure, regarding infrastructure and activity, it becomes a responsibility of operators to make sure that they are able to ensure that they secure their rail reserves, and the RFR makes that determination in terms of the regulation. And I think it's something that we must be able to enforce. We know the situation that has happened there in the Prasa environment was very unfortunate with those security contracts, and really we couldn't have that. But it's something that the regulator, as part of this new legislation, will look in terms of that particular element. Moving to the last comments, Chair, which has been raised, where we are sitting, and I think I've established that in, I think, our second slide, where I've talked about the railway safety gap analysis, and especially the issues that we have raised in that particular element. You'll see that the bill now talks to an element under the funding streams, which was part of those gap analysis. We make sure that there's a clear other element of the powers that must be performed by the board and those that must be performed by the COO. We provided that element, the issue of safety, critical grade, there's a section clause that deals with those particular elements in the bill, Chair, and how do we make sure that safety, critical grade employees are clearly managed, they register, there's a database by the railway safety regulator. The issue of appeal mechanisms, we have provided now in the bill those powers of the CEO, how we appeal, starting from the railway safety inspector, the CEO, the board and the appeal tribunal, and the issue of this investigation of separation is those issues that really came out of the gap analysis. To the best of our ability, Chair, we believe we have really addressed those particular elements. Moving to clause 30, Chair, which has been raised about the issue of the independent review of how we need to be able to deal with that. The principal, the element principle here, Chair, is that we believe that the owners must be able to rest with those that submit the safety permit, and they must be able to submit information that is very easy, clear to the regulator to be able to do that. So if there is information that is submitted and we believe we cannot probably agree amongst ourselves in terms of that process, we're talking about an independent review. Not really about the samples in terms of the laboratories, but about really the technical information that will be dealt with. Mostly the work that is done by your engineering firms in that regard, and there's really specialized English people in the country who deals with signaling and everything. And we believe we are an independent, we are a mature railway sector that there's really more capacity that is available really to deal with those issues. It's really not about the laboratories in that particular regard. So it's more really technical information of what you then submit as part of your safety safety management system, which is then prescribed by the railway safety operator. The issue of a national railway information system, Chair, it is really a data repository which is prescribed one by the current legislation that taken over towards the bill to make sure that the regulator maintains up-to-date information in terms of our railway network system, both freight and operations. And that is fed by the information that is submitted by operators through the safety management system. And it really helps us to be able to deal with the compliance level that we need to deal with. So that when our enforcement inspectors goes out to do both enforcement and compliance in terms of and audit and inspection, they're able to make sure those elements that are dealing with it. We have had some obvious challenges with the previous system of LIMS in terms of the modules, but we are currently now in the current financial and the real estate regulator is working on that, and we've been getting good positive feedback, Chair and honourable members, from that. We believe that we are ready to be able to deal with those particular elements. And I think in terms of clause 62, of making sure that we make sure that those people that are in the railway reserves are there's compliance, operators can be able to fence those dealing with that. Hence, if you look at that, I mean, one of the strategies that is changing in terms of PRASA corridors implementation is to align with this current regulation, where they are even introducing the issues of walling our rail corridors and especially critical elements of electric substation, which fits into our rail infrastructure. So for us, I think it is critical that we are able to deal with those particular issues, Chair. There was the last issue that was raised on the reputational damage. That time to look at the clause on the major investigation.
Thank you, DDG, for the comprehensive response to the questions that were posed by members of the select committee. Any last word that the minister or the deputy minister would want to say in relation to the presentation as we then move closer to our internal matters? DM?
Chair, thank you so much, and good afternoon. Is it still or is it still morning?
Still morning.
I hope you We hope that the honorable members will push the But thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, dear. Though it was a bit difficult to get the gist, but we got the at least able to appreciate the thrust of what the DM said. Let's then on that note, on behalf of the members of the Select Committee, indeed convey a word of appreciation to the effort taken by the leadership of the department through the minister and the DM for leading the team to take the Select Committee into its confidence in relation to the thrust of this bill. It's quite important that we are able to run with the process. I think what is quite important is to appreciate the like as you said, the context within which this amendment to the National Railway Safety Regulator Act is taking place with a view to ensure that there is clarity in relation to the role of various players, the powers of the CEO versus the board and the minister, how do we address the funding challenges. But I think more than that, I think the team took us into confidence in terms of the objects of the bill, what are the key provisions contained in the bill, the object, the funds, the safety permits, the safety critical rate framework, the safety standards, and also the who are the parties that are consulted. But more than that, the monitoring and safety information system, the powers of the railway safety inspector. We are more important now in terms of what we'll be doing to brief our provinces. And on that note, DM, the DM is free and his team to move out because we have exhausted the briefing. Also the CEO of the regulator, we appreciate your presence. What we'll then do as the team step out of the platform, we'll then deal with internal matters. Amongst them will be the issue of the minutes of the last meeting that we had in relation to the negotiating mandate. Enrico, can you flag the minutes?
Thank you,
DM. You're excused. Honourable members, the minutes that we'll be dealing with is the minutes of the 8th of November, where we're dealing with the negotiating mandates of the National Land Transport Amendment Bill, the National Road Traffic Amendment Bill, and the Economic Regulation of Transport Bill. Those are the attendance of our members, and also we had also the members from various legislatures. They are reflected there. Those are the guests that we had in attendance. And then the support team to the committee. They're also noted there. We then deal with the remarks and the apologies, and that is and what forces how the meeting unfolded. The overview of the mandates on the National Land Transport Amendment Bill. That is how it is captured. And then the National Road Traffic Amendment Bill, that is how it's captured. And then the negotiating mandate of provinces in respect of the economic regulation of transport forums. And then the deliberations and resolutions of deliberations and reflection by members.
Yeah, one of them.
And then we dealt with the minutes. Those are the minutes that we dealt with the honorable members. Any correction that members might have identified? Okay. That's the. Can we then that's indicate that in relation to the minutes, can we get a move for the adoption of the minutes, honorable members?
I move, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khaya, for moving.
The
minutes on the 8th of November. Thank you, Honorable Tango, for seconding the move to adopt the minutes of the 8th of November. Therefore, the minutes is duly adopted. The issues that are emanating from the around the Free State, we have communicated with the Office of the National Chairperson around the matters arising point from there. And then any issues that you want to raise, Committee Secretary?
No, Chairperson, there's nothing much to say that next week we'll have a meeting on Wednesday and a meeting on Friday.
Okay. Thank you. Committee Secretary, I think that's important because of the congestion, but we have the permission from the responsible authorities given the need to accommodate some of the concerns that were raised. Have we already received comments from the department?
They've responded on one aspect of the bill, but we've requested them at least to finalize all the comments.
Okay.
Yes, and also then I see on the land transport, our parliamentary legal advisor, Ms. Pumelele, she has responded. I will be sharing the document to members.
Thank you. And I hope that did not disrupt preparations towards the exams.
I hope so.
But we really appreciate the effort that she took in relation to to those comments. Members, I guess that we... Honorable Bratterfeld, I see your hand is up.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry, I don't want to delay anything. I'm sorry, I may have missed it, but can Rebecca please just post a revised program for this committee, either on the WhatsApp group or to email it to us? And I apologize if I'm the only one who missed it, but if we just have the revised schedule. Thanks a lot. I just keep confused between this select committee and Honorable Chai select committee, just to make sure I can diarise. Thank
Yes, yes, yes. Kripeka, do you have, can you fly it?
Okay, Chair. Let me see if I can quickly open it.
Thank you, honourable members. That is the revised program as sanctioned, and the and like as honourable Bratterfeld has requested, we will share it in the WhatsApp group of the Select Committee on Transport, so that at least members are able to take a heed of the changes that are affected. And on that note, members can then take this opportunity to indeed, on behalf of the committee, express a word of gratitude to all of you for the attendance, and also ensuring that we infuse and also get much more clarity in terms of what is the thrust of this railway safety bill. And your participation has indeed enriched our appreciation and understanding of what is the thrust of this bill, and also a word of gratitude to our support team, from the committee secretary, the assistant, the researcher, and also the conduct advisor for the preparations they put in so that this meeting succeeds. And our PMG, your presence is highly appreciated, the department also, those that are still with us, and the public, we really appreciate your attendance. So therefore, the meeting is adjourned formally. Thank you, members. Let's meet at 2 in the house.